Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Mission log, supplemental. A visiting delegation from the Wadi species of the Gamma Quadrant has turned four crew members into pieces for a bizarre game.
Chula! Welcome back, podcast listeners and viewers, to another brand new episode of the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast, where this particular mini-series we are looking at controversial, unloved, maybe meme-worthy episodes of Star Trek. I am your usual host, Captain Mike Wilson, and I am joined, as always, by my faithful number one, DK.
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm not too bad, mate. Yourself?
Oh, you know, yeah, getting by, playing the odd game here and there, making it to around the fourth chap. But myself and DK this week, if truth be told, full disclosure, we wanted to save this one for ourselves because we've been talking about this one for a while. So, yeah, if you aren't aware what we're going to be looking at, well, you know, look at the screen. But otherwise, if you're not watching on YouTube, today's episode is going to be the Deep Space Nine episode.
He had said something about moving along home.
Move along home. Time
to move along home.
This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at the episode Move Along Home from the first season of DS9, the somewhat infamous episode. So, join us to head to Quark's Bar with a visiting delegation from the Gamma Quadrant, and let's see if we can work out the rules of this daft game together. But before we do that, we always like to, kick things off with a little bit of a soft introduction in the section that I like to call Hailing Frequencies Open.
Hailing Frequencies Open, sir.
And yeah, just us two here this week, DK. So I don't think I've asked you this yet. I can't remember if I have or not. But have you mentioned, do you have anything in the Star Trek universe that you particularly are not fond of that you think deserves to be hated perhaps a bit more than it is even?
Not really, other than that episode. But other than that, I don't think there's anything I kind of truly hate. Ask me that when the Trek sitcom is on screen.
Oh, I think it could work. It's got Tony Newsom behind it and Lower Decks works.
Yeah, but I don't know. I've seen sitcoms in fictional universes before, and I don't have a great deal to say about it. But
I mean, Lower Decks is technically that. Yeah.
There's nothing I really hate. I mean, even the aspects of Trek that I dislike, I still prefer to 90% of everything else that's out there. It's,
yeah.
I think as fans, we have a tendency to overreact sometimes and say something's the worst thing it's in the world when it's really not, and we're just judging it by the standards that we know it could be. And I think that's that's a good way. It's a good reason why we're doing this episode of garbage, really, because it's what is to one person garbage to another is a really enjoyable episode. And I think there's always something to be found that we can enjoy, even if it's just the final, you know, the final appearance of Ray Walston.
Any new viewers, DK's, you know, ongoing hatred of the Voyager episode, The Fight, has become legendary. So that's what he's referring to when he mentions that episode. And as you said, the late, great Ray Walston, who deserved a little better, but never mind. And, you know, conversely to that, which I definitely didn't ask you and I haven't given my own thoughts on, is there anything that you think the fandom doesn't look, fondly on en masse that you think is unfairly maligned and you would like to say deserves a second look?
I'm not going to say it's unfairly maligned, but I still don't think Prodigy is getting the recognition that it deserves. And it does deserve recognition because I still think it holds up.
I was not a fan of that second season, to be honest.
I enjoyed it. I watched it and I thought, I don't know what Mike's problem is. Maybe he's out of sorts.
But I just felt let down. I don't know.
That's fair enough, I guess. Yeah, it's, I don't know. How can I put this? as well as Prodigy, which I still don't think he's getting the recognition it deserves. I will always be a huge defender of Star Trek The Motion Picture. And
that's fair.
Even now, it gets a lot of lambasting. It's too long and boring, and it's not Star Trek. And I don't think it's any of those things. Maybe it's because I grew up with it, but I think it's fascinating. It's got some good characterization in it. We've said this before, but I could watch that flyby of the Enterprise for another 20 minutes at least. I just think it's good. It has that mystery aspect to a Star Trek movie that I don't really think we've seen since. The initial premise was to boldly go where no man has gone before. And a lot of the episodes, it tapped into that kind of mystery as to what's going on. And yes, they went the other way after Motion Picture and they were successful and I do love them. I'd be a hypocrite to say that I don't, but that mystery element of Star Trek and that element of the strange new worlds kind of thing kind of died away to make more naval battle type movies, which fun, yeah, but there wasn't really much of an alien contact. I think the first time that you can really definitively say that something new turned up was the probe in Trek 4. But even then it was kind of second fiddle. And I do love the fact that, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think Motion Picture's perfect. It's far from it. And it has its flaws, but I just think everyone automatically writes it off along with, you know, Trek 3 and Trek 5. And they pull all this, you know, odd numbered gubbins out saying they're all odd movies are bad. And I don't think they are.
Trek 3 is brilliant. I've never subscribed to the theory that I adore Trek 3.
Yeah,
I don't see anything of what everybody's problem is with that. I think it was just a nice, convenient way to say, oh, all the odd-numbered ones are bad because it so happens that 1 and 5 aren't great. I don't think 7's bad, Generations. I don't think 9's bad, Insurrection. My worst ones probably are 1, 5, 10, 11, and 12, if I have to pick them. But I would say not only do I think Star Trek 3 is unfairly maligned, I think it's a bloody brilliant movie. You know, yeah. I mean, it's not Wrath of Khan, so it suffers a little bit from following it, but I think it's at least up there with Voyage Home for me. So, yeah.
That's fair.
Sorry if that's a controversial opinion. But no, I kind of wanted to give some of my thoughts because I didn't really mention it, and I have a lot of things I think that are unfairly maligned. From the obvious, I'll start with, turning off a huge section of our audience that will switch the podcast off, and I still don't, come... make time with this whole all Kurtzman Trek is non-canon or to be hated gubbins. Just get out of here with that crap. You know, I don't love everything about everything that's come out, but I also think writing them all off is stupid. Discovery has some great moments, even if you hate it. And yes, I was one of the people that really didn't like that first season, I'll be honest, when it first came out. But I also, you know, didn't then decide to make my entire personality detesting anything that came out from Alex Kurtzman. Looking at you, Robert Meyer Burnett. Can't stand that, honestly. And, you know, I keep hearing people saying they're not going to give Lower Decks a try because they don't think comedy can work. And I would disagree and say, please give it a go. I hear people, as you said, that won't watch Prodigy because it's a cartoon. Please give it a go, especially that first season. You're going to be surprised. You know, there's more to the new stuff, even if you like it, than Strange New Worlds. Branch out a little bit, you know. Have a look at these things. You might end up really loving them. There's some truly brilliant stuff in there. In terms of the kind of, I guess, classic Trek, there's an episode of the original series that I like, even though I admit that its reputation may well be deserved. I like it because I grew up watching it with my mum when I was way too young, like 4 or 5 years old. And it's the original series episode, And the Children Shall Lead, if you know that one, DK.
Is that the one where the guy turns up on the bridge at the end and he starts mutating when the kids...
Yeah. It's basically, yeah, the kids are rescued from a colony that's been destroyed by this life form that appears to them as Gorgon, the friendly angel. And I just love it because, yes, it's dumb and it's silly, as a lot of the original series is. But like I said, growing up, I have such fond memories of watching it with my mum. And as a five-year-old, her just knowing every bit of this rhyme that I still can't fully remember and just trying to sing along with her at 5 years old, going like, come too far, come to me, friendly angel, come to me.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it's all coming back to me now.
So I admit it's not good, but I have fun with it. And I don't think it's, you know, it's not the worst episode of Star Trek ever. And as I said, I've mentioned a lot of the movies are unfairly maligned. I will definitely always go to bat for Star Trek Beyond, even if you're not a fan of the Kelvin timeline. I think too many people got put off by those first two movies and didn't go and see Beyond. And I think it's a crying shame because that was the course correction I really wanted from the Kelvin universe. And it just seems to have killed it off completely.
I never really took to it, if I'm being honest. It's not that I don't like it. It was just, I don't know. It just, I guess I was just hoping for more.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Right. I mean, that's fair enough. It's just, yeah, I think it's just a shame that nobody went to see it and it was the big release for the 60th or 50th anniversary, one of the two. 50th, probably. And yeah, it doesn't deserve to be the one that killed the franchise off, especially considering, like I said, I think it's easily, handily the best of the Kelvin timeline movies. So no, I think that's probably going to cover enough. I probably have thoughts on other stuff, but I'm sure I'll mention it at later dates if they come up and if we keep ongoing with this podcast. Yeah, so no, I'll share more thoughts as we go on probably, but we're here to talk about specific things. So we will get into our episode review, but before that, you know what's coming, DK. It's the section that gives its podcast its name and that DK occasionally forgets exists. So I'm going to jump over to the hit or miss section.
What about my performance?
I'm not a drama critic.
Honestly, I really did forget.
I knew you would.
Yeah.
So, you know, apologies if you know this off by heart. We've done a lot of episodes, but just in case anybody is new here, the hit or miss section basically just involves me putting up things from anywhere in the Star Trek universe. I come up with them just off the top of my head. DK doesn't know what's coming because I've done them this week, and I will throw them up on screen if you happen to be watching on YouTube, and for DK here if he needs any kind of visual aid. If you're listening, though, don't worry, we'll go over what
he probably
what we're talking
will.
About. So yeah, it can be absolutely anything in the Trek universe, characters, you know, behind the scenes things, episodes, things that appear in episodes, whatever. You'll see as we go on, it's the best way to just jump straight in and do it. So with that in mind, I always tend to, you know, dot in things related to the theme now that we're doing themed series. So there will be some things that you'll perhaps see cropping up that you think are from episodes that aren't particularly great, or at least aren't well regarded, or are controversial in some way. But that's not going to be the entirety, because I like to also just, you know, care about other things, especially when it comes to DK, because we don't always get a chance to just chat about nerdy things about Trek just between the two of us. So here we go. And I really hope we haven't covered any of these things before. If we have, again, I'm really sorry. And DK, if you want to just mention if we have, and we can just leave it if you want. But yeah,
no worries.
So, right, the first thing on my list, I know we definitely haven't covered, and I'm certainly interested in your thoughts on DK. And it's a little bit out of left field, but I thought, why not, you know? So hit or miss for Star Trek Online. Over to you, DK.
I haven't played it in a little while. My experience with MMORPGs is limited. I was never into World of Warcraft, tried, but just couldn't get into it. Did a DC one, not too bad, but the after game thing is not my cup of tea. I was pleasantly surprised by this. I booted it up, I will be honest, I did get it when it first came out, tried it, and again I thought, oh, it's just one of those, never going to be able to get into it. And then a couple of years later, picked it up again and freaking loved it. I love the fact that they continue to make content for it. And as a gamer, that appeals to me, simply because of the fact that they're giving you free content to continue the game. So at that point, I don't really have any compunction if I want to, say, spend a bit of money in game, buying a ship or something like that. Okay. You know, I see that as a way of supporting it when they're giving you free content. I never even finished all the story-based content because there's just so much of it. I got close. I started the latest event at the time, which is the one, I think, where Ilea came back. I really enjoyed it. In a lot of ways, I do like that it has its own canon, and it takes elements that you wouldn't necessarily think would go together from the various series and just kind of chucks them in a blender and comes out with some really cool stuff. I think it's eminently customizable, both your characters, the ships. I just love it. I mean, I'm not, as I say, I've not played it now for a while, but I really enjoyed it when I was playing it, and it's something I would go back to. It's never been taken off of my console, and it's always updated because I know that sooner or later I will be returning to it. And I have to add, I love the special events they do every once in a while. They did one for First Contact, I think it was a couple of years ago, where you had to compete against other players to get your Phoenix off the ground. The summer one, which usually takes place in Risa, I have great affection for. But the Christmas one is absolutely fantastic. It is so stupid. And I'm all over that. As well as the ice skating, racing and stuff like that. The one that I don't know if they still do it, if I'm being completely honest, because it's been a few years. But they had Klingon ice fishing, where there was a sign of a fish and you just had to go with these special gloves and just punch the ice until the fish turned up. And then there's another where you basically run around trying to, as a mob, trying to defeat the Klingon Krampus. And who keeps throwing gifts and shit out at you when you beat him up to such a point. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's silly fun. And I like that they lean into it. They've got some serious storylines in there. Some of it's very tricky. But, yeah, I still love it. I still have my Heisenberg class ready to go.
Awesome. So, hit or miss?
Oh, definitely a hit. Definitely.
Was not expecting you to talk for so long about that, but I'm pleased you did.
Sorry. I get carried
away. No, that's fine. No, that's absolutely fine. That's like I said, that's part of what I put it on here for, because I wanted to hear a little bit about it from somebody who I know played the game, because truth be told, I've never played it. I probably never will. I don't have the time. I would find it too complicated to get into. I just don't really do video gaming. But having said that, I can appreciate what it means to a lot of other people and how kind of fun it is. And I do think from what I've seen of people that do enjoy it, it's good for what it is. Like, it's not, you know, the gameplay is good. And it's like you said, it always gives you new content and things. And it's probably great. It's just that I'm not the target audience for it, if that makes sense. Yeah. But I will still call it a hit for various other reasons. First of all, the fact that they basically have the best ship designers currently working, and the, you know, that basically led to the inclusion of a lot of the Star Trek Online ships into canon when it came to Picard season 3. And I think they're beautiful. I'm actually looking at the Pathfinder, Gagarin, and Edison as we speak, because they're just in front of me. from there, and I think, yeah, there's something cool about flying your own ship and stuff, which I think would always lend itself to a game. I did used to initially kind of balk about it when it first launched, because I didn't like them saying this idea of, like, this is the official canon continuation, which was clearly never going to be the case, and sure enough, now it's not. You know, the actual you know, on-screen canon has contradicted it multiple times, and I think you always kind of had to look on it as, you know, Star Trek fan fiction or alternate universe, if you like. Oh, yeah. If you want to get there, but, you know, but having said that, like you said, it brings back a lot of actors, you know, that have done stuff. It combines all the eras. It did the cool thing of updating the Discovery era ships, which always felt in the wrong era anyway, to look appropriate for the correct century. I did do a little deep dive into those, being a ship guy, so I know that there was a storyline that was like they founded a fleet yard that happened to still be around that was lost in the 23rd century, and so they just upgraded all these ships, which is why you have, you know, modern 25th century ones that look like the ones from Discovery. And I'm like, okay, whatever, I'll buy it, you know. It sounds right to me. And as you said, it ultimately gave us the Enterprise F, which I just love that ship, and I'm glad we got to see it, you know, for a fraction of a second on screen.
So, yeah,
I'm gonna say a hit for what it gave us, even though I'm not, you know, gonna ever probably play it. So yeah, safe to say a hit for that one. Anything you wanted to add?
No, it's Yeah,
we're not sponsored, by the way. I just wanted to hear about it because I thought it would be an interesting thing, because we always talk about, you know, other stuff, and I thought we'll chuck this on the list just to hear some opinions. The next thing on the list, I have a feeling we haven't covered on the show, but I know we definitely have, just in private conversations and things that other people won't have heard. So, hit or miss for the character of Lieutenant Hemmer from Strange New Worlds. Over to you.
It's a difficult one. I like him.
Okay. I was not expecting to stump you with that one.
No, I like him. It's, I don't feel I can make a reasonable judgment because he wasn't around long enough. And yeah, and then he went out in pretty much the worst episode I've ever seen.
Worse than the fight?
I had to retrace that in my mind straight away. No, it's not awful. It's not the worst episode, but for such a strong season, it was such a letdown.
Oh, it
so
is. Definitely in my bottom three episodes, I think, of all time.
Yeah, it's... yeah, it's not great. It's I liked him. I would have liked to have seen more of him, but I can't make an accurate judgment. If anything, I would just say hit, but slightly on the side of hit, because we didn't really get to know him.
Okay. I was surprised because I thought you were going to be in agreement with me from our previous conversations, which is to say that I think the character is a hit. I think the treatment of the character is a huge miss. Because I feel like we did get to know enough of him, a little bit of him. And, you know, I mean, we're doing shorter 10-episode seasons, and so you can't expect that we're going to get what we did with previous, you know, with Trek iterations of these characters. And, I mean, it's kind of reminiscent of Tasha Yar. There's enough there, I think, that you can make an informed judgment of whether you like the character or not. And I love the character, and I wanted to learn more about him, and I think...
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
The actor, Bruce Horak, I think was fantastic and is fantastic. He returned a couple of times, including the K-pop Klingon in the musical episode, which was great. I love Hemmer, and I would have liked to see more of him. And I just remember, as much as we hated the episode All Those Who Wander for various reasons, including the Xenomorph Gorn and things like that, I think we all agreed that the treatment of Hemmer was the stupidest thing that episode did, because I just think killing him off was a really dumb decision. Like I said, we were all invested in that character, and it was a rare character from Strange New Worlds that didn't have like an original series counterpart. You didn't have to have him walk in and be like, hey, I'm Scotty or Sulu or this person you recognize. It was just like, wow, you've developed a new kind of cool idea. We've never really seen an A&R outside of Enterprise at all, and we certainly haven't seen one in a main role. There was something cool about the idea of representation that you had going on there by casting a blind actor to play the blind character, which again made it all the more egregious that that was the guy you chose to kill off. Which seems a bit like, it's not great optics, is it? So I love the character. I would love to have seen more, and I'd be all up for, whether it be a spin-off book or whatever, to hear more about his history and how he came to be in Starfleet and stuff like that. And I'd love to see more of the character if we can, flashback or whatever, because I think fantastic character, really great actor portraying him. And I think it was, I maintain, probably Strange New Worlds' biggest mistake was killing this character off. So, So hit for the character in any case. Yeah. So again, a bit boring. We've both just more or less said hit there, I think. I'm with you. Like I said, I want to see more of him, and it's a shame we're never going to get to, probably. But
no.
What can you do? So the third thing on this list is an episode which I have a feeling might not be well regarded, but I don't actually honestly know, because I've never really heard that much about it. It's just got a very outlandish premise. So hit or miss for the Deep Space Nine episode, One Little Ship. DK, over to you.
Planet of the Giants. It's an odd one, considering when it takes place. You're going through all this Dominion stuff, and then this hits you. But I don't dislike it. It's a fun little thing. It's nothing to, to write home about as such, but it's quite enjoyable. And for that reason alone, I kind of think, I can be dealing.
Okay, fair enough.
So I kind of like it.
Fair enough.
I'll give it a hit.
Awesome. I like this episode. I think, to your point, you said it comes at a difficult time because it's in the middle of the Dominion War and stuff. I think it came at the perfect time because it immediately follows the episode Far Beyond the Stars. And my God, I needed something lighter after watching that. I don't mean that in a bad way. I adore Far Beyond the Stars, but it's a traumatic thing to sit through, and it's going to leave you in tears and emotional if you have any kind of heart. So following on from that episode, I'm really glad we didn't have to get into that war's a nightmare and we're going to struggle to get by. It's like I needed a bit of levity after that. So I really appreciate this episode, even though the episode, because it is at this point in the show, does have to still, feature the Jem'Hadar taking over the ship and feed into the Dominion War that way. I really liked it, and I should in theory hate it, because I've mentioned before I kind of hate when Trek relies on silly sci-fi type tropes, but there's something about the kind of shrunken crew kind of idea that I can't help but love, even if it's in something terrible. I recently rewatched the Doctor Who story, The Invisible Enemy, Not a good story. Don't particularly like it. Don't mind the whole shrinking down and going into somebody's body thing. It's been done a million times, from Inner Space to...
I can say, I watched Inner Space last week, mate. I can't really criticize that.
And so, yeah, it's a trope that I should hit, but I don't mind it because it's just fun. And you can only really do it in sci-fi. It's never going to be something we actually experience. But you know, I kind of love that, and I love how funny it is. And just the idea of silly things like, you know, having to have this tiny miniature runabout open a door so they have to fly into the correct button on the door panel to hit it with enough force as if somebody's pressed it. And it's like, oh, I just love it. I think it's quite fun, you know, without being completely camp. Like I said, it came at the right time for me when things were quite dark. I mean, it's not going to be anybody's favorite episode of DS9, myself included. It's still quite filler, but that's a hit.
That's fair enough.
Speaking of little ships, I always like to put a ship on, and I'm kind of trying to think outside the box at the same time. So this is going to be an odd one, but hit or miss for Captain Proton's rocket ship.
This is one of the few Eagle Moss ships that I actually do own.
Woo!
Yeah. So it's retro. It's Flash Gordon. It's chintzy. So yeah, it's a hit. I, unlike you, us paupers, we don't have many Eagle Moss, so...
not sponsored.
Yeah, so...
No, I mean, if you want to send me something, Eagle Moss, I've given you enough money. I've got well over 100 of your ships. I'd say they don't even exist. Whoever it is that took over the license, you're asking too much for your ships. Give me some free ones. I kind of have to agree with you. I love this. You know, if you know me at all, that I love retro Flash Gordon type stuff, and there's something beautiful about how just it captures the silliness of that, you know, when everybody thought rocket ships were just going to be phallic looking things with fins, and, you know, the silly logo that's on it of the like Starburst or whatever it looks like, the fact that it's all just like a little metal, you know, tin looks like the kind of stuff they could have made on a 1930s to 50s budget. And yeah, just the fact that it fits perfectly with everything about the Captain Proton program and its kind of loving homage to the serials, the sci-fi serials of yesteryear. I think it's lovely. And I also have the Eagle Moss model of it, I have to say. So, yeah. I'm surprised you have even bought it on the Eagle Moss model. So
it was, but, yeah, it was nice. It was on sale. I got that and the Aventine at the same time. So
I don't actually own the Aventine because it's not canon.
It is in my head.
With that handled, then we're going to move over to our main episode review, which, as I said, this week we're going to Alan Moraine, count to four, Alan Moraine, then three more, etc., etc. You know the rhyme. It'll be stuck in your head for weeks now. We're talking about this episode. We're talking about DS9's Move Along Home.
A spark analysis.
And before we get started, again, hopefully you've forgotten about this, DK, so it can be a nice pleasant surprise. But if you've been regularly listening and you've been listening since our previous Romulan series, you know that I have an idea that I've stolen wholesale from the Delta Flyers podcast, which is to try and encapsulate the episodes we're reviewing in the form of poetry, both a limerick and a haiku, which I decided for some reason that I was going to write for each of these episodes. Even if the episodes themselves aren't great, I've still somehow decided I want to write poetry for them. So I've done the same for this. I have a limerick and I have a haiku. And since you're the only person here this week, DK, you get the say entirely to yourself. Which do you want to hear first about Move Along Home, the limerick or the haiku?
Haiku again. I'll always go for haiku first.
Haiku. Oh, unusual. So yeah, my haiku, again, fairly simplistic. It has to stick to the 5-7-5 syllable rule. I simply put, the Wadi stopped by with the most annoying game. Not Quark's fault for once.
I have one.
Okay.
I actually did one today.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know. No one was more surprised than me. The Wadi love games. Quark must choose. Will he double? Chula, second chap.
Nice. I like that a lot. That's perfect. Awesome. I wasn't counting along the syllables just to make sure or anything. Just, yeah. I love that. I love that. Hopefully I'll not forget at the end of the episode to chime back in with my limerick. Have you also written one of them?
Otherwise you're doing pickups again, dude.
I know. I've had to do that twice now. But yeah. So have you written a limerick as well that we can expect later? Or
I might have.
Oh, yes. I cannot wait. I love limericks. Oh, awesome. Now I want to get that over with. But we'll reach that at the end of the episode. Something for us to look forward to together. So, yeah. Fair enough. We may as well jump in to the BTS section, the behind the scenes of this episode, before I start asking, you know, about the history of it. We'll do the behind the scenes first, I think, and then talk a bit about our initial impressions. And for the behind the scenes, it's always kind of DK's purview to handle that. So I will hand the command of the station, I guess, over to you, DK. What do you have for us?
Cheers, dude. Yeah, as it says in Wikipedia, the episode has gained notoriety as one of the worst episodes of the series. According to one of the writers, Gene Kerrigan Fauci, the name of the game, Chula, comes from Chutes and Ladders, as the maze game is a three-dimensional form of the game. Michael Piller said that this episode was inspired by the episode Checkmate of The Prisoner. Really? In some early versions of the script, the characters who became trapped in the game were placed in a surreal village similar to the village featured in that series. Oh. Yeah, you really did that wrong, dude. Move Along Home was affected by budget issue. No. That arose at the middle of the first season. Piller commented, I would have thought, based on my Next Generation experience, that at the midway point of the season, I'd be in great shape. I knew Move Along Home was going to be hugely expensive, but I thought that I'd have money to burn because we'd done so many shows on the space station. This was the biggest budgeted show since the series pilot, Emissary. Really? Holy shit. The budget constraints made the filming of Move Along Home complex for the production team. David Livingston commented, it was a killer. It came at a point in the season where we were over budget. We didn't know how we were going to do the show. We had to make substantial changes in it, and yet it was still a huge episode. David Carson, the director, pulled it off. So, yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. That's all I've got, mate.
Yeah, that's some handy, I think, a bit of information there from behind the scenes and a little bit of already touching on some of the issues, perhaps. So before we get into...
Yeah, sorry, I didn't have much more, mate. That I kind of lost out with trying to get my head around the limerick.
All right. Don't keep teasing us with that. But yeah, no, I have little bits on the other sections and stuff, and I think you might have something for one of them or a couple as well. But yeah, before we get into the sections of breaking down, talking about writing, plot, direction, and all that stuff, we always like to go around and ask, what was your first experience, if you can remember, of this episode, DK, and what were your initial thoughts after the first time you saw it?
I'm going to be very unpopular here.
Okay.
I used to buy the Next Gen tapes as they were released.
Oh, yeah.
I used to work in game. And we used to stock them, and I used to spend all my wages pretty much either on getting drunk or getting these things. So I got all the Next Gen. So when Deep Space Nine came out, I was like, oh, sorted. I got the Emissary, liked it. And then because I'd already budgeted for the Next Gen, I didn't have enough money for the Deep Space Nine. And I thought, oh, I'll get round to them. And I bought two tapes because they were on buy one, get one free at the time. And I thought, yeah, I'll take the plunge. And I got the tape with Q Who. Is it Q Who?
You mean the DS9 Q episode?
Yeah, the DS9 Q one.
Q less.
I got that tape and I got the tape with this. And I didn't watch DS9. Then until many, many years later, I really wasn't sold. After the Q-less and this, I just thought this series is not for me. Yeah. It just seemed very amateurish compared to Next Gen, and I just thought no. So. Yeah, I think the first time I actually watched DS9 all the way through was about 3 years ago. And when I think it was just before I started doing these shows with you. And now, weirdly enough, I don't know if it's kind of a Stockholm syndrome, but I kind of dig this one when it comes along in the, not so much Q-less, I still can't take to that one. But this one, it's there. It's never going to be anything more than it is. So, yeah. But the first time I saw it, I really wasn't impressed.
Mm. Okay. I can't fully remember the first time I saw it, because it took me a long time to warm to DS9. Like you, I probably caught a couple of episodes of season one when they first came out and was very much like, it's not for me. I don't think it's not going to be. And there's too much political intrigue and Bajoran stuff and whatever. So it's not going to be something that I watch, I don't think. And looking back, I mean, those first two seasons do not ease you in and are not great. With Next Gen already on the air, like you said, it wasn't like you kind of felt you had to watch it because it was the only track you were going to get. And we went straight from there to Voyager. So like you, I probably didn't see it when it first came out. And then I watched all of DS9 on TV when it used to be shown, I think, on BBC Two. They went through like the various Trek series from the Next Gen to Voyager era and used to show them once or twice a week at like 6:25 or something on a weekday. British viewers will know what I'm talking about. So I probably watched it when it came on TV the first time. And I remember just not thinking that much about it, except I was relieved that it wasn't, you know, another Bajoran story or whatever, because we'd had a lot of that. And I was like, oh. You know, by this point in the series, we'd had an awful lot of this guy doesn't want to move out of his home and the Cardassian war travesties and all the rest of it. And I was just like, ugh. So I was probably relieved at this point and was like, well, at least it seemed like a blooming Star Trek story. You know what I mean? But it took me a long time, like I said, to get used to things. And even things like the character of Quark and stuff, I was very hesitant with for a long time. So I probably didn't think that heavily of it and would maybe have thought like, oh, well, in terms of the first season of DS9, it's not terrible. It's one of the better efforts, at least for keeping me interested as a young'un. So I would have seen it a couple of times, but they probably were both on TV. So let's move along home then. I have a little bit about the writing to kind of fill you in on. I think that was my area. So I'll jump into that. Hopefully it's going to be more informative than dry. And again, DK, if you want to chime in at any point, just please feel free. When it comes to this episode, the story was by Michael Piller, co-creator of DS9. The teleplay was by Frederick Rappaport and also Lisa Rich and Gian Carrigan Fauci. The story began as an idea from Piller, and it was originally titled Saw Losers. I've mentioned this in a couple of episodes when it comes to the more controversial treks, but this is another episode that was referenced on Lower Decks. I just watched the episode and I can't remember the title of it, but basically, the game comes up as something that a particular crewman was traumatized by, and they find in the kind of, I think, temporal and weird events room on the Cerritos. But certainly it's referenced quite heavily. The original ending by Rappaport was different from the ending that appears in the finished episode. He commented, "Michael Piller was dissatisfied with my ending, in which Sisko and the others had to cross over a chasm. The chasm fell away, leaving Sisko essentially hanging by a thread. He was telling Kira and Dax to go on because the passageway to freedom was on the opposite side where they were. They had to save him, and it was very Indiana Jones style." Okay. I mean, we got something quite similar to that on a budget.
Yeah.
But anyway, according to the writer Rappaport again, in an earlier version of the teleplay, our people win the game, but they discover that Bashir has not been returned to the station. So Fallow strikes a deal. Quark must return all his winnings if they want Bashir back. All right, it might be a little bit more interesting. There was another comment by guess who? Frederick Rappaport. The audience never really understood the game, and that was the idea. All the audience needed to know was that our guys were in jeopardy. They needed to know as much as the characters needed to know. How the heck did they get out of there? In the end, Rappaport was disappointed that much of the threat present in his original script was removed by the reveal at the end. He said, "The ending, where we learn it was just a game, undercut everything that went down for the previous four acts. It all seems pointless if there wasn't any jeopardy at all. I've heard from some fans who felt cheated that the characters were never in any kind of threat. I agree with those fans." However, Rappaport was pleased with the episode up to the final moments, commenting, "On the other hand, I know others who were satisfied with it too. Up to that point at the end, I was as spellbound as any viewer. I was hooked. The show was imaginative and well-realized, and it has gotten a great deal of attention." So, yeah, any thoughts on any of that, DK?
I can see what they mean with regards to the ending.
I disagree, but I've talked about that at length, I think, when it comes to my conclusion and stuff, so I'll get into that a bit later. But I don't agree with that assessment. I never stand with this thing where people are like, oh, the main characters were never in jeopardy. Are you really a TV viewer that tells me that the main characters of any show are ever in jeopardy? Because I'm sorry, I mean...
Yeah, it's... I don't know. It just feels like such a kind of letdown. But at the same time, as you say, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
The writing, I don't know. It's
you seem really stumped by this episode.
I am. It's weird. I was thinking, yeah, I want to do Move Along Home. Yeah, I want to do Move Along Home. And now it's here.
You've got nothing to say.
I don't so much hate the writing of the episode. It's how it was executed that I think lets it down. If you looked at this on a script, on a page, you would kind of think, yeah, I kind of get the feeling for this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's how it plays out, and I don't think that does it any favors.
Right.
God, it's a tricky one. I think it's got some brilliant parts in it, but the writing, such as, you know, the start when he's talking to Jake, the sections with Quark and all that kind of stuff, they're really well written. I really like them. Even, you know, the part when Jake goes into see Odo, and then, you know, the scene shortly afterwards when Odo goes to Ops. Really well written.
Okay, but, disagree with you on that one, but okay.
No, I think it's well written. It's just it's executed in a way that it's difficult because it's like the Deep Space Nine version almost of Tron. Right.
I have no idea what you mean, but I'm on this journey. I've jumped on my lightsaber.
Right, no, you've got the real world and the game world.
Yeah.
The real world, yeah, I can accept that. The game world, that's a little lifeless. Right?
It doesn't hold up to
the promise. The difference is, in Tron, you had pretty visuals to look at. You didn't have corridors from your average Mexican restaurant. And I think that's what the problem is with this. You know, you're in a game. You're expected to see something that's really fantastical. You know, it's a game. And by this point, even in the 90s, you had kids that were raised on things like Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, other role-playing games. So essentially, when you look at the script, what's there, your mind runs away with visuals and saying, oh, this is going to be amazing. And, you know, you think, are we going to get kind of like dragons or something like that? I mean, I know.
I never expected that to be.
Oh, no, I thought we'd have something more than three spotlights moving down a corridor.
You're doing a little bit of that kind of thing that you complain about in fandom, where you're judging the episode for what it's not instead of what it is.
I am, but when you're in a game, you just expect it to be more visually interesting than a girl playing hopscotch and a cocktail party, which is, you know. And then I think that last bit where they're on, you know, essentially planet Hell, I think they kind of maybe stretched that out a little too long. The weird thing is, as writing goes, there's an interesting point hidden in this episode about predeterminism against free will. And they completely gloss over that because, you know, these characters, Sisko and Kira and Dax and Bashir, they're making these decisions on their own. But is it Quark making these decisions? It's never really kind of explained.
Well, Quark's basically I read it as more Quark's responsible for what they're going to face, as opposed to, like, he's not the one dictating their actions, but he's dictating whether what they face will be particularly easy or difficult, which is because you kind of, for me, have to have an explanation as to why the tests that they face could not be more easy and simple. It's like, all right, follow the rhyme, or, oh, okay, you have to drink the drink that's being passed around, quite obviously. And it's like, these things are not mentally taxing, you know what I mean? It's not difficult
but
to find
it's
out
when it comes to things like the sacrifice and that kind of thing. And yes, it does kind of play out that if you don't sacrifice one, all are lost. But it makes me wonder if, just for example, if Sisko or had not taken a swig of that drink, would that reflect? Obviously, Quark would lose the piece, but then Quark would be going, why? Because it's not like he rolled anything for that. He's just set him on a journey. So I think there's like a bit
you
of an
have interest. To have the... No, you have to have the scene where he realizes that it's them, though, because that's basically what happens with Bashir, which he even says, oh, you've lost that piece. And it's not because of anything Quark did. It's obviously happening in the world of the game. So I can kind of make my peace with that. It's just basically, it's the equivalent of playing a board game and landing on a square that tells you what to do, except there is no square telling you with being lived somewhere else. You know, like...
Yeah, but that's it's not so much a problem. It just set it up as an interesting little aspect that was kind of maybe downplayed for so we could have someone chewing the marine ops. And
I didn't mind it. I mean, you've got to bear in mind it's meant to be a completely alien culture and everything as well. So it's like, to them, this is basically the kind of thing they probably, you know, your average five-year-old probably plays on their world, so...
Yeah,
I'm fine with it. At least it's an exotic, weird, kind of cool sci-fi-ish idea.
Yeah, I just think how it was written wasn't bad. I just think the problem in this one lies in the execution. So as far as writing goes, I can kind of give him a pass.
Okay, cool. Well, I have a few notes that I wanted to kind of touch on in regards to the writing, if you don't mind. Like you, I like the scene where kind of Sisko's chatting with Jake at the start of the episode. And he kind of, it's a bit of that kind of ongoing season one thing about who is Nog a bad influence and stuff, which kind of keeps a bit of interest. But my favorite bit, just because it made me laugh, is that I couldn't help thinking of, do you know the Fast Show, the character Swiss Tony from that?
Yeah.
When Sisko starts lecturing Jake about what first contact is, and he's like, first contact is a lot like, and I just couldn't help imagining him going,
it's a lot making like love, making love to a beautiful woman.
I mean, it's essentially him doing that, and I was like, so I chuckled a little bit at that, you know. The next point I've made is more of a question that I have, and it really bugs me, and it's an in-universe thing, and I'm sorry if it's really geeky, but why exactly couldn't Bashir replicate a new dress uniform? Like, there's no reason given as to why, and I get that's a little bit of, again, levity and a bit of humor, Bashir going like, oh, I could have sworn I packed my dress uniform, but like I said, replicate a new one, or even if you wanted one in person, one of the biggest ongoing plots of the show is that you have a tailor on the station. Ask Gareth to make you one. Like, there's a thousand ways. But again, I know this is silly, and I know that the real world reason is because they hadn't yet invented the Bajoran dress uniform, but they did in future episodes. So now, retrospectively, why isn't Kira in dress uniform? Because nobody comments on that. Because if you remember I can't remember which future episode it is, but there's definitely future episodes where she wears like this weird clamshell blue version of her Bajoran uniform, which is said to be the dress uniform, and it's got the kind of, you know, really tailored long coat and everything. And yeah, so like, granted, now the explanation, if you're watching it for the first time or whatever, could be, well, Bajorans don't have them. She's in uniform, that'll do. But again, now they've kind of screwed themselves over by inventing one, because you have to look back and think, it's been a bit disrespectful, isn't she?
Yeah. No, I didn't pick up on that one.
Anyway, on the plus side, I really liked that Sisko does the logical thing of assuming they're in a holodeck or holosuite, if you like, and immediately, instead of, like, you know, mucking about, he does the thing that we'd all do if we were sensible, and sort of says, computer, freeze program, arch, whatever, you know, because you would assume that, wouldn't you? That's, you know, you're in this weird place, whether it looks like a Mexican restaurant or not. So yeah, I liked that part, and it's a bit rude, but I can't help but kind of be amused by Sisko's brashness when he's like, if all else fails, just yell again, Doctor. We'll find you. I've made a note here of when Odo's talking to Jake for the first scene, and Jake's like, oh, we were going to watch the transports. And Odo goes, you mean look at the girls? And there's the most awkward little pause and smile from poor Sarah Clifton, who's great in most of the episode, but in that scene, I'm like, oh, come on. It's a bit much, is all I'm saying. While I'm talking about logistical things that the audience are all going to groan that I'm pointing out, why would a Gamma Quadrant culture have a rhyme that makes sense and rhymes in English?
I just see that as... Yeah, I got nothing, dude.
It ain't that kind of episode. But yeah, I mean, it's stupid, but it's still, because it's such a key point, I was like, fair enough. You've got a universal translator that would translate things, but the fact that it rhymes perfectly is a bit like, hang on. But whatever.
Yeah.
I just said that chap was pretty easy, but I think all of the tests are, not going to tax the brain power of your average 5-year-old, let alone, trained Starfleet officers. When Quark does what you said, like the unfortunate role that basically gets him to lose Bashir, I just wrote down, he's attacked by lights?
Yeah.
What was that?
That's what I mean. It's oh, dear God. It's just...
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know. I can't justify that, and it is very much like we don't have the budget for this. But yeah, I
mean, kinda, they were pretty lights.
Well, yeah, but I do like the scene, as you said, on the kind of planet set that you're used to, where Dax is hurt and can't jump, and then Dax says, "If I was hurt, I'd leave you behind." To which Sisko's response is just, "Well, I'm glad I'm not the one who's hurt." Then,
you've jumped ahead there. That is my favourite line.
Oh, okay, fair enough. But yeah, there's a bit too much, not just in this scene, but throughout the episode, of like referencing things, people that are not in Starfleet, which bugs me because you're under a Starfleet commander on a core Starfleet-owned station. Presumably, you still have to follow some kind of rules. So, yes, I get the kind of the throwaway humor of Sisko telling Kira, "I should court-martial you for not just leaving me," and her going, "Ah, you can't, I'm not in Starfleet." Like, okay, that's funny, whatever. But then even Odo, when he's like telling the guy in Ops, "Oh, I'm just beaming aboard the ship," and the guy's like, "You can't just do that. We have rules." And he's like, "Well, that's tough shit. I'm not Starfleet. I can do what I want.
Yeah.
Beam me over." And I'm just like, really? I mean, eh?
Yeah.
Is that how it works? I mean, that doesn't seem right. Anyway. Like I said, I didn't like that kind of second scene with Odo and the random, terrible at his job Ops officer that they have in the episode. Because... he's bad, that guy. He's rubbish.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Anyway. And I have to say, as I kind of sort of mentioned earlier, I actually like the reveal they weren't ever in any real danger, and the lovely subversion of Fallow saying, "It's just a game." Like, you've known that from the start. Yeah.
I do like that. It was just a bit, and it was all a dream. That's how it felt to me.
Maybe. I can see where you're coming from, but I didn't mind it. And the ending, I think, is kind of... you're either with it or you're not at that point, but it basically... you can't complain because it's a very, to me, original series throwback-type ending where you're basically ending with a somewhat cheap gag. So, they've revealed that he's cheating and they ask, "Oh, perhaps a rematch one day." And then Quark's like, "It could work here." And Jace is after them to the sting of the theme tune. And I was like, all right. It's a lame joke, but it's not like TOS didn't do that 50 times.
So,
any thoughts then on the rest of the writing before I move us on, because that's all I've got really.
No, that's pretty much everything I have, dude.
Cool. We'll move to the acting then, and I have a little bit to read out on this. I think again it was me that's doing this, so let me just say that Terry Farrell's work on this episode prevented her from appearing in the Next Generation crossover Birthright Part One, which was filmed around the same time. Siddiq El-Fadil, as he was then known, guest starred instead, and Farrell commented, "I cried. I thought I should have fallen off the rock so I could have gone over there instead of Sid disappearing, because when we were filming Move Along Home, his character disappeared, and I was acting throughout the rest of it with Nana and Avery, and we got caught up together." I didn't realise that, but that, that gives another explanation as to why Bashir had to briefly disappear, I guess, to appear in Birthright. Armin Shimerman enjoyed aspects of the episode and said, "In its own cracked way, it's an okay show. It was the first time the writers allowed Quark to get somewhat serious. As Quark, I was once again screwing up, but they had given me a wonderful, almost heroic speech. They allowed Quark to, if not be a hero, at least have aspirations of doing something heroic, and it's one of my favorite episodes." So, yeah. So then, any thoughts on the acting? I'm going to throw it over to you again, DK, not to put you on the spot.
What can I say about this one? Holy shit, there is some bad in this. let's start off with basically Avery Brooks. Avery Brooks is good, but there must have been times in this where he just thought, "I'm sorry, Jeez, it's.
I thought he was good. I didn't.
No, no, he's good. But what I'm saying is, the stuff that he had to work with. I mean,
he's in a Star Trek show. You know what you're signing up for. Come on.
There's a part in The Simpsons where, you know, Bart says to Lisa, you know, I can pause it. If you look at this section, this is the exact point where his heart breaks.
Heart breaks, yeah.
Yeah, this is what I feel like when I watch Avery Brooks on that hopscotch. It's just, oh, poor dude.
That's hilarious. I love it.
It's
you're either here first or you're not, I think, and I'm getting the sense you weren't and I probably was.
It's weird because I actually love it, but I can just imagine how you must have felt. And yeah, it's not great. I think Terry Farrell is fantastic in this, especially in that section where she goes kind of full curse on and she's telling him to leave him behind, the bit that you've already referred to.
Yeah.
Kira, again, I don't know. In series one, I think she had a little bit of a tendency to overact at times. Mm. And I don't pin that on her as such. It's just how it is. And she was still finding her feet at that point with regards to the character. And, you know, they were still trying to decide what to do.
I put that on the writers because I've made the same notice that she's stereotypically just angry and grumpy about everything. But then again, I get the sense that that's just basically what her entry in the series Bible said. And you got to remember, this character wasn't supposed to exist. It was meant to be Roll Aaron from Next Generation. So they just basically pulled Kira out of their butts at the last minute. And I do get the sense through a lot of season one that they were just like angry Bajoran. That'll do. And there's only so many ways you can play that. And Fiona Na gets no depth. I mean, when she does get to do stuff, even in season one with actual depth, like the episode Duet that we've referenced in a previous episode, she's really good. But for a lot of the time, I mean, her dialogue in this episode just consists of, I don't like this. I'm not Starfleet. This is silly. And I'm just like, oh, God, she's such a buzzkill. Do you know what I mean? At a certain point, you'd be like, yeah, we're all trapped here, love. Jesus, shut up. Do you know what I mean? But, sorry, I interrupted you there anyway.
No, you've said it.
I have to agree with a lot of what you said, so I don't have tons to add about the acting. I think Avery Brooks was good as well. I think Sarah Loughlin was great, even though I kind of criticised that one brief moment, especially for such a young actor. And you get a shock going back to season one and seeing how young he was, you know?
Yeah, that was a real reality check.
Yeah, exactly. I think Armin Shimerman, I have to agree, is really good in this episode. Even when he's given really kind of silly lines like, do you have sex on your world? I believe it from Quark and him sliming around enjoying the game, I like. But I also like that he gets the intelligence level to be the one that recognizes that, oh, there's four missing crew and four pieces on the board, and he puts it together, and it doesn't drag that out like I've seen some other, you know, serialized shows and sci-fi shows do. He kind of realizes the obvious. And I like that he asks Odo to take his place at first, because you would. Like, he's stupid, really, until he realizes, you know, there's money potentially as well. But I really just, there's a real risk that it could have went over the top in his begging scene, but it actually just stays the right side for me.
Yeah.
And Shimmerman sells it.
I think Shimmerman's great in this. And I think, Aubergenois. Sorry, brain fart.
That's
I think most people are great in this, but there's a couple of things that really just acting wise, it's just like being kicked in the scrotum. And one of them is you've mentioned him, the good morning, Constable Odo. I have no idea what possessed them to go with that. That's one. And the second one, I think you know, because
I'm going to disagree with you on this.
Listeners, prior to the recording of this episode, we both turned up with the same avatar.
Oh, okay, I'm going to agree with you on this.
And that performance by now Alexander, my God.
It's terrible.
That's like he just wandered over from acting school. Oh, dear. That was pitiful.
I'm a Bashir fan as well, but I have to say, like, he's pitching it completely wrong. It's just, like I said, with Shimmerman staying the right side of OTT and having something broad to do, Seda's the opposite. He gets something fairly simplistic to do and makes it far too broad. So as you say, you've got it as your little icon there, your little avatar. Like, what's this about? He's screaming and screeching like he's being tortured, and then the revelation is, oh, I thought I was sleeping and I was trying to wake myself up, and it's just, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Talk about overacting. And he does it throughout. He just responds to everything like he's, you know, you're at a 12, dude, and Avery Brooks is over there on a 4, and even he feels like he's giving it a bit too much sometimes. You know?
Yeah. It's you watch it and you just think, this is not an episode to show a prospective romantic partner as to how good Star Trek can be.
I wouldn't know, but yeah, I certainly wouldn't be doing that.
It's rough. It's rough. The his acting in this, I don't know what happened, but him and that, you know, unnamed ops officer, they should go to break.
Yeah,
acting break.
I'm inclined to agree with you, but I will add as well a couple of things. First of all, I agree with you on Terry Farrell. Not just in the scene you talked about, but I like that she's the one that stays calm and methodical because she's the science officer. So she's not like freaked out by the game. She's thinking it through, and she gets, you know, a rare chance for a pretty woman to be intelligent and capable in an early Trek, you know, in a Berman era Trek at least. And other than that, I personally found Rene Auberjonois a bit of a mixed bag because, like I said, they seem like they have the same problem with Kira, which is that they've found one dimension to write him for, and they're happy to stick with it, and he hasn't quite developed that much yet. So he has some good stuff. Like, I do like that he basically chastises world's worst Starfleet officer who's, you know, sitting twiddling his thumbs while people are missing, and I like
the way Odo's... How the hell did that dude pass his exams? How the hell is he a commissioned officer?
It's just the fact that he's like, well, I heard they had a big night, you know, partying with the Wadi for First Contact, so I guess they all just slept in hungover, and it's just like, dude, how stupid are you?
I mean, he's the Star Trek equivalent of the guy from Office Space that talks about his old face.
Yeah, he clearly doesn't care. He's there for a good time, not a long time, when it comes to serving on the ops, and he just doesn't want to be there. He's phoning in his job, which I suppose, you know, realistic. Even Starfleet would have people that are just there running out the clock. But yeah, I like that Odo chastises him with, have you lost many commanders? But what I don't like about that scene is Odo, again, they don't seem to know what they're writing, so it's the way he goes, don't talk to me and call me Constable. I'm the chief of security, you buffoon. And it's like, you let everybody call you Constable in every other episode. Kira calls you that constantly.
Yeah, but in fairness, I won't want that guy calling me something that anybody else calls me. Just,
what are you supposed to call him? He has no rank. I mean,
just call me sir and keep your stupid voices to yourself.
All right. Fair enough. And the last note I will make, as I said, I was kind of waiting for you to criticize this because I think it's going to be divisive. And I just happen to fall on the positive side. I think Joel Brooks, who plays Fallow, the lead Wadi, I love him.
I think,
you know, fair enough, he's over the top and he's camp, but he's pitching it to me just right because that performance kind of has to be. And I love the way that, like, Quark's asking him what to do with the game. I forget what the context is, but the way he says, like, neither, both, and he's giving it the shtick, and I was like, this guy is auditioning to play the Riddler in Batman Forever. It was around the same time, and you can just tell he's like, he's giving it his all at that. And I mean, he's voguing at the end of the episode, for crying out loud. He's basically, and he gets away with it. And I wish this guy had been a recurring guest star or, you know, somehow ended up on the station, because I love it. I'm here for it. You know, it's cheesy in the best way. But that's all I have to say about that. So any thoughts on the acting before we move to direction?
No, that's pretty much it. We've crucified the two people that was most deserving of it and giving kudos to everyone else, so I'm happy to move on.
Okay, so we'll move to direction. And Diki, I believe you have a little bit to share with us about that.
I do, if you just give me a second.
That's okay, I can
always... David Carson, the director of Star Trek Generations, directed this one. This was the second episode of Deep Space Nine he directed. He found it extremely challenging due to the cost and complexity of the episode, but showrunner Michael Piller wanted to do it. Frederick Rappaport commented that he had a different conception of the game environment. Mine was an exterior setting, almost Neo-Martian Chronicles, with a touch of Gaudi-type architecture. There you go! There were houses in a little village, but they were distorted, as in a nightmare. Everything was angular and weird. The setting for the game was much better inside than on a clearly delineated outside set. They made the rooms and hallways almost Arthurian. Is it Taco Tuesday at Camelot? It was much more of a phantasmagorical image.
No, he's saying it would have been more Arthurian if it had been the outdoor one, I think. More phantasmagorical, but what he ended up with was, like you said, a taste of Bombay.
Yeah, yeah, it's... So, yeah, that's all I got, dude.
Okay. I don't have much about the direction because we've touched on a lot and there's not really much to say. I feel for David Carson because it's quite obvious he was given no budget and had to kind of come up with this broad sci-fi idea. What did I have? I have a few notes, which isn't very much. Like, to your point, I didn't like the Cisco change of location. I thought it was rather weak. The way he's lying on his side in bed 1 minute and then he's there the next, I thought was a very weird, clunky transition. But I do love the zoom out, revealing that he's in the kind of the room when he thinks initially it's a holodeck. I thought that was pretty good. I hate the stupid weird background stick banging that the Wadi do. I get it's an alien culture and they'd have weird rituals, but my word, that's just annoying.
Yeah.
The daft rhyme and the moves, I can understand people hating it. I'm on board for this. You either are or you aren't, and I'm on that ride thinking, yeah, it's cheesy, but what the heck? It's a couple of minutes and they look ridiculous, but it's fun. And we can meme the heck out of it. And the only other note I have is just that, like, I didn't like there wasn't much reaction to the huge game parts just appearing from nowhere. Like the game board, I should say, I think I've written that down wrong. Like when the Wadi say, we've had enough playing of Darbo, and, you know, they've seen them cheating. So they say, let's play one of our games. And then this massive board just magics into Quark's bar out of nowhere. And I'm like, yeah. What the heck? Not even like a transporter effect or anything like that. It's just there.
I do love the fact that, you know, it's a first contact thing and yet Quark's trying to swindle him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Quark. Of course he is. Because they're winning by miles. And then, I kind of like some of those scenes, the way that, is it Broik?
He's
cheating clearly for Quark. And Quark's like, Broik, you make cheat.
This is the last time.
Exactly. So I like that, and I like the way that he's trying to stop them playing initially, and he's like, oh, but this poor Darbo girl, look at her sore hand where she's been spinning this wheel all night and stuff. I'm like, come on, Quark. But so I liked all that. Any other thoughts on the direction, or can I move us along a bit?
I was just going to say, I kind of like the direction in this as you know, as far as it goes. I like that, you know, they created the silhouette of Bashir towards the end. I do like, I'm with you on this. I do like the absolute cheesiness of the like little hopscotch type game and getting these actors to just make fools of themselves. I think the best way I can describe this, it is, you touched upon it earlier, it's very much like a original series episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's, they put them in some ludicrous situations, and I'm here for that crap.
Yeah. Has the production value of a 1966 episode.
Exactly.
At times, but, you know, you got to go with it. Like I said, sometimes you just got to, I mean, again, we are fans of classic Doctor Who, dude. We've seen worse. Cool. So shall I move to the VFX production design?
Yeah.
I have a little note again just to say that the chasm scene was the most complex scene in the episode. We've already talked about that towards the end. David Livingston commented, we spent a lot of time planning it along with laying the airbags that they fell onto. It just took a lot of time and a lot of thought. We had a lot of discussion about where the chasm would be and the logic of how one person that's injured couldn't get across and the other two could. We ended up putting on a Matt shot to see the chasm. That's Matt, M-A-T-T-E. And it just took a lot of planning to make the logic of it work and then be able to make it physically inside there. I just suspended disbelief, mate. I wasn't bothered really about, like, well, it's not that far. You know, I knew it's a set, and I knew it's the planets that you use 100 times. I'm just, I'll go with it, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And lastly, Shigemi Numazawa, sorry if I've mispronounced that, was commissioned by Paramount Pictures to paint spacescapes for the sets of Deep Space Nine. His paintings would appear in quarters and in a classroom of the space station, and Move Along Home was the first episode to introduce his paintings as set dressing. Couldn't tell you where they were, so don't ask. But
no, I can't remember seeing anything like that. So unless they were in the in Cisco's quarters.
I can only think it must have either been in Cisco's quarters or Quark's Bar, because those are the only two real sets that we go to.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, any other thoughts on the VFX or the overall production that you have on this episode?
It was okay. It was just your standard fare, really. I kind of like the game. I kind of like the game design.
You've torn it apart previously.
No. The outside game design.
Oh, okay, good.
I kind of like that. I'm surprised they never had something like that in Trek Vegas.
But yeah, you'd think, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And I'm surprised, you know, Franklin Mint or something didn't come up with like a crystal version.
Own your own, your very own Tula. Only $59.99 over a period of 6 months. Because they brought out multiple versions of the blooming 3D chess. I don't have much about the VFX production design, literally two notes. First of all, it's nice to see the next-gen dress uniform. I'm a fan of it. And yes, okay, it doesn't fully fit DS9, but it's what we had at the time. And it was nice to see, even if I didn't love that scene at the start. And the Wadi, they're a bit lame. For a species from the Gamma Quadrant who should be even more alien, they've just basically got tattoos on their head. We could have done a little better than that, really, couldn't we? There's not really much else to say, except I have a section for the music and sound, and all I've written is that, yes, music, I recognise that something dramatic has occurred. You don't have to hold my hand.
You know? Yeah.
Which I often write, because it didn't bother me at the time, but watching 90s TV back now, there's an awful lot of, like, okay, I get it. Like, don't. It's the end of an act. I know that something dramatic has occurred. I know you're going to have to resolve it. You don't need to, you know, hold my hand through it with the musical accompaniment. But whatever, it was, it's not offensive. It's just kind of,
Yeah.
So, do you have any thoughts on anything else then before I move us on to the audience critics response?
No, that's pretty much it, dude.
Awesome. So, in that case, as I said, I will open our subspace communications.
Incoming transmission.
And what I've been doing for this particular series, partly because we don't get a lot of responses from the audience, and partly because these are not very well-regarded Trek episodes, so it seemed like it might be a bit one-sided, was to go in and look at the critics' response to the episodes and why perhaps they are regarded the way they are. So I have the critics' response for this episode, and then DK is going to share our audience response, because we did, as usual, put out a prompt on our social media pages and got some responses from you listening, hopefully, who contributed to your thoughts about the episode. But as regards the critics, the episode has developed a reputation among both fans and critics as one of the worst episodes of the series. For example, in 2019, Screen Rant ranked it among the 10 worst episodes of Deep Space Nine, noting at that time it had a rating of only 6 out of 10 based on user rankings on IMDb. Digital Fox ranked this episode as the second worst episode of all Star Trek up to 2018. Really?
First?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. Probably Spock's brain. It should be Code of Honor. In 2018, Comic Book Resources included the episode in a list of Trek episodes that are, quote, so bad they must be seen. Similarly, in 2020, Sci-Fi Channel called it the silliest episode of the series, but actually encouraged watching it, commenting, this thing is so weird, it can't not be celebrated. A 2015 binge-watching guide for DS9 by Wired recommended skipping this episode. In 2016, fans at the 50th anniversary Star Trek convention voted Move Along Home as the worst episode of DS9 and the 8th worst episode of the Star Trek franchise overall. Disagree. The only episode of DS9 to end up in the bottom 10. What? Avery Brooks, who played Commander Sisko, reported during a panel discussion at DragonCon in 2013 that this was one of his two least favorite episodes. And no, Dickie, I don't know what the other one was. I don't think he elaborated with that. We can all speculate, perhaps. In 1993, Move Along Home was nominated for an Emmy Award, however, for Best Hairstyling in a Series. Cool. Ira Stephen Bear commented, you could just as easily say that Move Along Home was a third season show, and you don't make your characters seem that potentially foolish the first year. But this is Star Trek. You want to believe your audience has a certain amount of sophistication that they'll accept what you give them. quite know what you mean by that, but okay. Ronald D. Moore stated that when he watched the episode prior to joining the DS9 writing staff, he was, quote, wondering if everyone had lost their minds. Tor.com's reviewer wrote, okay, it's not good exactly, but the vitriol many throw at this episode is often on the same level as that reserved for the likes of Spock's Brain and Sub Rosa, and it's nowhere near that bad. Finally in agreement with somebody. Ford A. Thaxton, one of the producers of La La Land Records' Star Trek DS9 collection, likes the episode. When asked in an interview why, he commented, I'll tell you why. It's a very Next Generation-esque show, right? But the best moment in that show, the memorable moment, is when Sisko, Bashir, and Dax are going through this whole thing about what they're going to have to do, and they go to Kira, and Kira just looks at these guys like they're completely out of their minds. Hey, I'm not Federation. I don't do this. Something along those lines. That was the moment I remember from that. She just says, wait a minute. Okay. And finally, for my part here, James F. Broderick wrote, perhaps the most interesting use of Lewis Carroll's opus is in the DS9 episode, Move Along Home. Deep Space Nine lends itself more easily to Alice-based interpretations. So, yeah, over to you, DK.
Yeah, we've got some interesting views here. Just give me one sec. Nevin Gerard Klippenstein from Holodeck 4, he says, I give it a sharp 7. Move Along Home. Quark finally gets his, and we all learn a great lesson about the value of entertainment and respecting cultures. Over in the Star Trek VIP Nerd Lounge, Barbara Chaffet, Viol Orapello, and excuse me if I mispronounce any of that, says, this episode is so bad it's good. The hopscotch scene is a must-see, and I need to make a ringtone of Quark begging. And Herstory Lanuso says, I agree. Joanne Gallo says, this is a fun one. Over on Blue Sky, Judd says, I, unironically, have always liked this episode. This episode is what taught me that Quark is a deeply faceted character and is more than just the stereotype of a greedy Ferengi that's looking only for gold-pressed platinum. Jeremy, over on our Discord, he says, I'm going to give it 3 out of 5. It's not a masterpiece, but it is fun and doesn't deserve half of the hate it gets. Quark is a highlight in this one. Over on Red Shirts and Runabouts, Brian Stibe says, for my money, probably the worst episode of the entire series. Fortunately, most was so much better. Well, Ryan Levinger says, all the actors, especially Avery Brooks, hated this episode. I never watch it on rewatches. I skip it and feel good about doing so. Lol. Definitely the worst of DS9, but I wouldn't say it's the worst of the whole franchise. Back in the Star Trek VIP Nerd Lounge, Bozina Thrower says, I love this episode. 10 out of 10. Can't understand why others don't. Joel Brooks was so good, I wanted him added to the cast. Yes, yes, yes. Where are the games? That's right. You were there for the groveling. And in our Hit or Miss Star Trek group, Sci-Fi Queens, hello, Nita, says, this was a terrible episode, but the one redemption it has is that Sisko sang that stupid song and he rocked it. Nick says, a carnival of cringe, love it, but maybe not too frequently. And over on Mike's Facebook, Tyler Weddell says, DS9 proves Star Trek prescient once more, again with this fantastic foray into an alien escape room. Puzzle 1, navigate a maze to a riddle with an additional step. Puzzle 2, endure toxic gases. Puzzle 3, survive planet hell. If you ain't got what it takes, you'll never beat the stakes. So, yeah, that's it for the audience feedback on this one.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for everybody who contributed their thoughts on that. I think, I'd say mixed, but it's a surprising amount of people not really hating the episode for considering its reputation and some of the polls that it came out topping in terms of worst episodes. But, yeah, before we finish up then with our own favourite things and our conclusion and score, I've remembered this week, DK, that we have to return to our poetry corner to give our second half, which would be both of our limericks, because you chose to begin with the haikus. If you don't mind, I'm going to save yours for last, because I feel like it has to be the main course that we lead up to, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, you poor bastard.
Oh, good Lord, is it that bad? I'm surprised you made one, and I can't wait to hear it. So I'm going to regale the audience, hopefully, with my limerick first of all. So this is my limerick summing up Move Along Home. The Wadi came by with a game, but it turned out to be quite a pain. With the aim to go home, through the levels some roamed, with an echo of Alan Moraine.
Ooh, nice. I like that.
Thank you. Thank you. I had to get Alan Moraine in there somewhere, really, didn't I? Okay, then. You can't hold off any longer. We have to hear your limerick.
Okay, here goes. Jake is thinking about girls, while Quark gives Chula a whirl. He will soon see, unlike the Wadi, it's more than just giving dice a hurl.
I love that. That's brilliant. I like it. Rhymes perfectly. You see, limericks are fun. I love it. I do. I really do. So, yeah, hopefully you enjoyed that, audience, because we're going to probably keep doing it for at least the rest of this series. So, yeah, I'll move us along then to the final things, as I said, that we need to wrap up this with, beginning with our favourite character moment and line. So who was your favourite character in this and why, DK?
It's got to be Quark. Because you do see a different side to him. And I think Shimmerman gives a fantastic performance in this. So, you thought I was going to say Alexander there. But no, it's definitely Armin as Quark.
Fair enough. My favourite character, again, surprising nobody, is Fallow. I think it's clear this was Joel Brooks's audition for Joel Schumacher's Batman. And I'm here for it. what was your favourite moment or scene in the episode?
I'm going to go with Hopscotch.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, it's so cheesy that I just can't help but love it.
I said the same exact thing. I almost went with the end for the kind of subversion of it, but the rhyme and the little actions that they're forced to do are just too funny and memorable and catchy.
So it's like an actor's workshop where they have to do the most dumb thing imaginable, except this time they filmed it and sent it into, syndication.
Exactly. Yeah. And finally, do you have a favourite line?
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier. It's the, if you were hurt, I'd leave you behind, but I'm glad I'm not the one who's hurt.
Of course, of course. And my favourite line was already mentioned by somebody in the audience response, but I think you may have skipped over it, not realising it was a line from the episode. It's as much for the delivery by Armin Shimmerman as the line itself, but it's when he says, oh, that's right, you were here for the grovelling.
Yeah.
I love that. So, in that case, we are at the end of the road in terms of our thoughts, and we have to give our conclusions and our score out of 5 Starfleet Deltas, as always. Do you want to start, DK, or would you rather I did?
I'll go. I'll get it done. I'll rip that Band-Aid off. DS9, it struggled to find its feet in the first year and was guilty of throwing pretty much everything at the wall to see what stuck. And no episode sums that up more than Move Along Home. It's a strange concept that would seem more at home in the original series than in this era. It's a little ludicrous, colourful, and cheap-looking, with some performances that are pretty much comparable to Officer Riley singing I'll Take You Home Again, Kathleen. It's very much got a Spock's brain vibe. But that's not to say it's bad, and it's certainly not the worst that Trek has to offer. It's camp, it's fun, it's a treasure trove of memorable lines, it's scenery-chewing garbage. And while I could postulate on the aforementioned predeterminism via free will, I'll just gloss over that and say it's infamous for a reason. That reason being, while slop, it's enjoyable slop, and I love it. And I'm going to give it 3.5.
Wow, okay, that's fair enough. That's quite odd.
I will asterisk that with, I am a big Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan, so bad things I love.
Fair enough. Okay, so I'll share my thoughts, and I will just say, if you'll allow me, Alan Moraine, come with me. Alan Moraine, stars of 3. Alan Moraine, count to 4. Alan Moraine, then one more. Chula, 5 stars. I am, of course, kidding. Before we all get excited. I had to do that. I shared that with DK months ago on Facebook Messenger, and he responded, I doubt it'll get 5, but you have to work that in somehow. So I'm keeping my promise to you, DK.
That's fine, dude.
Slight mislead. my actual conclusion. This one I don't get. Okay, it's not a gold standard classic episode, but there's nothing really wrong with it as such, outside of perhaps being filler. Is this why it got such a negative response, or is it the campness and the silliness? Because that's just fun. Trek has never been consistently po-faced, and several other episodes do weirder or more ridiculous things and get considered comedy classics. I really don't see the problem here. The plot's entertaining. It's a cool sci-fi worthy idea, and it has me interested enough while watching. The fact that it's ultimately all just a game is, to me, a clever mislead that avoids the old only red shirts can die trope. We know the main cast are going to be fine, and it's a good joke to lampshade that in a way relevant to the plot. This is also Trek being very prescient, again, as was mentioned. The game's just an escape room in many ways, so much so that, frankly, I would be amazed it hasn't been turned into an escape room for marketing and profit if Trek was run by anybody other than Paramount. But granted, the mini-games aren't really complicated. Some of the acting is still a little bit season one. And yes, it's an episode you could skip if you wanted, but thanks to Shimmerman's performance, the Wardy's incredible camp, some clever ideas, some catchy fun, and a neat ending, I'm prepared to say that not only is this not a bad episode, it's actually good. Not excellent, but certainly does enough to be even above mid-tier. And again, if you will allow me, Alan Moraine, feel alive. Alan Moraine, count to five. Alan Moraine, down to four. Alan Moraine, less half more. Chula! My score is, believe it or not, 3.5 or 3.5 stars. So pretty easy to work out the average, given that we both give it exactly the same score, which means that the final score for Move Along Home, which bizarrely has a strong chance of being the best rated episode in this little mini series, the final score is 3.5 or 3.5 out of 5. Easily topping the previous 2 weeks by quite some margin. So yeah, I just think we both think, why is it so negatively regarded? It's not that bad at all.
No, it's just it's just cheesy camp fun, and I can never diss cheesy camp fun. It doesn't it doesn't take itself seriously, which is a sin that maybe one or two of the others in this season do, and I think that's why I've given this a higher score than I probably would the others.
Yeah, precisely. Awesome. So yeah, thanks, well, DK, for joining me. You had no choice. You know, it's our podcast, but even still, thank you so much. Anything you wanted to share with the audience before I sign us out?
Give this episode another go. You'll enjoy it, trust me.
Yeah, just chuck it on. You know, if you're bored, go for it. So yeah, thanks if you've listened this far, and you know, if you share our thoughts, please feel free to let us know. And if you want to reach us, you can reach us at any of the social media sites that will be up on screen if you're watching on YouTube, because I have a little thing that I edit in that will tell you. But if you're not watching and you're just listening on a podcast platform, don't worry. I will also have the link to our Linktree, which also has all of those places that you can find the podcast. You can contact me in the podcast through that. Or if you want to reach DK, I'll always pass on the message, because otherwise he kind of hides somewhere in a Paramount soundstage and can't really be reached by any other means. But yeah, don't worry. We can always pass on messages. And hopefully you've been enjoying this little mini series. That's kind of an experiment with less well-regarded things, or, you know, episodes that at least are well-known or infamous, perhaps, is the word, because we are going to be back next week with another of these episodes, but it's hard to say it's an episode that is necessarily bad or viewed as such. It is, however, certainly an episode that has sparked a lot of debate. I'm hoping to be joined by Lady Vianne and Sandra Evanson, and we're going to be looking at the Voyager episode, Tuvix. So start the was Janeway right debates in the comments now if you dare, and otherwise join us for that. So yeah, just remains then for me to say hopefully you will have a pleasant week, enjoy watching some Trek. As DK said, give this episode another go. It's just a bit of fun, and in the meantime, remember, we are Starfleet. Live long and prosper. Chula!
Live long and prosper.
You have been listening to the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson and DK. Produced and edited by Mike Wilson. Additional material by DK. Please remember to like this episode and spread it throughout subspace. Subscribe to the Hit or Miss YouTube channel and follow us online. Links to all of our social media pages can be found via the link tree listed in the episode's description. For any queries or to apply to be a guest on the show, you can also email homstartrek@gmail.com. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcasts Network. You can listen to this and our sister podcasts on all good podcast providers by searching for Mike's Podcasts. Hit or Miss Podcast was based on an idea by Michael Wilson and Will Templer. Thank you for joining us. We hope you'll be back, but for now, hailing frequencies closed.
Better warp out of here at once. Maximum speed.